Welcome to Why Not Me, The World podcast, hosted by Tony Mantor. Broadcasting from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. Join us as our guests tell us their stories. Some will make you laugh, some will make you cry. Real life people who will inspire and show that you are not alone in this world. Hopefully, you gain more awareness, acceptance, and a better understanding for autism around the world. Hi, I'm Tony Mantor. Welcome to Why Not Me, The World. Today's guest is Patrick Sisk. He's an ABA therapist by day, comedian by night. And the stories he has to tell are just outstanding. So welcome to the show, Patrick. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So you're an ABA therapist living in Florida. If you could tell us a little bit more about yourself and expand on what you do.
Yeah, so I am a registered behavioral technician. So I work with different clients that we have doing ABA therapy. And so what I personally do is called NET instead of DTT, which those are two different styles of ABA. NET is natural environment teaching. So it's much more, and basically the word says, not to sound like I'm talking down to anybody, but it's natural environment. So if it, one of my clients right now hates people. She hates going out in public, cusses a lot. I mean, she's my absolute favorite client. Yeah, you never know what's going to come out of her mouth. But she said words that I had to look up. And I was like, oh, wow, that's an impressive cuss word. And I'm a stand-up comedian. So I'm like, oh, wow, okay, good. I'll have to write that one down. So I help her or any of my clients to just go through their daily life in a much more natural environment where ETT would be much more of a classroom setting, sitting down at a table, and more of a directive. They didn't know their colors. Okay, point to the green card. No, that's not the green card. That's a green card, and you go through that way. So with me, I go in home and I work with the kids on a one-to-one basis. And really get to know them and get involved in their family. And obviously there's a line that is drawn, but they quickly become like parts of my family because I'm in the house element.
Sure, that makes sense. So tell me, what age groups is it that you generally work with most of the time?
So I have worked, I used to work in a clinic doing DTT, and now when I lived in Indiana, then we moved down to Florida. And so now I work with all sorts of age groups. The youngest I've ever worked with was, I believe, 3. And the oldest I've worked with is 19. Currently, my oldest client is an 18-year-old. And I have 2 10-year-olds as well.
So is this a situation of where you go into the house on a daily basis? Or is it just once in a while? How does that work?
Yeah, it depends on the client. I sit down with their parents and map out a schedule, and then also look at what Medicaid has given them. So Medicaid gives them hours of how many, based on their acuity and based on their diagnosis and what problem behaviors are presented. So I have one girl who had SIB, self-injurious behaviors, and so she gets more hours than one of my kids who just screams. So it really depends on the acuity of the case. And so it's a case by case. So I have one girl who get 25 hours or can get up to 25 hours. And then the other two, I think, get 12 hours apiece. So in those groups, I can do 40 hours billable time.
If you've got one client that can do 25 hours and you've got another client can do 10 hours. And so do you have other people that you work with that might go into that one person's house
once a week and then the other person comes in? Or do you try and take and keep that familiarity going to where you see that person 25 hours and let somebody else handle the others?
So we've done it both ways. The girl that I work with now, who has the 25 hours, we used to split it up between three of us. It was just nobody's schedule could quite handle all 25 hours. And it was very quick. We were very quick to realize that she gravitated towards myself. And she and I just hit it off. She worked well for me. And again, she was the one who hates people. So it was like, oh, you like me? This is new territory. I'm not used to people liking me. This is weird. But I ended up being able to figure out my schedule to work so I could go do all 25 hours or close to it, 20 to 25 hours there. And then I split it up between the other two as well. So I've seen it work both ways. You have to have a lot of good communication if there's going to be multiple people on the case. For what we do, so there's an RBT that goes into the home, and then our supervisor, which is known as a BCBA.
And that stands for?
Board Certified Behavioral Analyst, I believe is what the letters stand for. And they're our supervisor. And so my supervisor comes in once a week to each case and just kind of monitors, make sure everything's going well, answers any questions that I may have, or answers any questions mom or even the client may have. And it's a time to sit down and really go, okay, hey, this is what I saw this week with her. And she got real upset about this, but I think it's because of this. And then, she can go, well, yeah, now that does make sense. Have you tried this? It's basically just another set of eyes to help me. So even though I am one-on-one with this client, I also have my supervisor who's coming in, who's giving me the directives. So I can't make any directives of my own.
Okay.
So if I think, hey, she needs to work on X, and X is walking down the street without mom being present. So that's something we are working on.
So you can't do anything really on your own without having a supervisor approve what you want.
Right. I have to talk to my BCBA and say, hey, this is something that I've seen as an issue. What do you think? And then we can collaborate and work towards that goal. But I can't just one day wake up and go, I think I'm going to make her do this.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because it is not in my scope of practice to be able to do that. I have to have, an RBT has to have a BCBA.
Okay. So when you get out there, have you seen that when you split it up, that it works? Like in this particular case, the girl liked you and compared to the other one, so you took it over. Have you seen the reverse happen to where you've had like three people go in for one person, it all worked out with all three of them?
I've seen it work some, not with a client of mine, but I've seen it work in other homes where we've talked and shared information. It worked. I prefer if I'm going into their home that it's just me. And then it's a much more personal, they know my mannerisms, and then I know theirs, obviously. So it's called, in our realm of work, it's called pairing. So we're pairing, so we're getting to know each other. It's like you would do if you were getting to know somebody. Hey, let's go out for a drink. Let's go play. Let's do this. Let's do that. And so obviously it's nothing to that extent.
Right.
So I sat down with her the very first day, and this girl who doesn't like to talk, doesn't like a lot of things. And so I'm a giant child at heart. So I just looked at her. I said, hey, what's your favorite animal? I thought about it for a second. She said, a tarantula. And I said, my God, I love tarantulas. And I went on a tangent about tarantulas. And I just so happened to know this song called the Tarantula Song that says, tarantulas, if there's no way you buzz for your hamsters, what it's probably because of tarantula. And I mean, it's a kid song, but it's goofy, it's dumb. I was like, let's play this. And she played it and she's like, that's the greatest song I've ever heard. And for the next 3 weeks, she wouldn't say anything but that song. And so So it was just a small thing where I said, okay, let me dive into this. I can't stand tarantulas.
I don't blame you there.
I've been into the Dominican Republic on mission trip where one has crawled up onto my backpack and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to get to meet Jesus today. That's cool. I almost had a heart attack. But where this girl found that excitement, and I met her where she was at.
Sure.
I didn't try to bring her to me. I met her where she's at. And that's where I think so many times a successful RBT, that's what we do, is we meet our clients where they're at. We don't sit there and go, well, you got to be here. We can bring them there later.
Yeah, that makes sense. You've got to get them to get to know you and feel comfortable with you being there.
Right, exactly. So when I work at a clinic back in Indiana, the way the clinic would work was in the morning we would start with one client, and then around lunchtime we would switch to another client. And we would have about 5 or 6 different clients that we would rotate throughout the whole week. But with here, it's much more direct. I've got 3 clients and I see them every week. And for me, I personally like NET and being in-home just because it's so much more laid back.
Sure. Have you had anyone that you've gone to and after a couple of days or a couple of weeks, you said to yourself, you know, I just don't think this is going to work right?
We had one client that I walked in, and it was, and I'm a very optimistic person. I am an optimistic person by nature. And even I see, you know, I can look at someone who's the worst person and go, oh man, but they sure did this well. And I walked into this one home, and the client hated taking showers, had a shower in 3 months.
Wow.
And hadn't cut his fingernail. So he had very long fingernails, but he also was just verbally and physically aggressive. And he was about 16 years old. And I remember looking at my supervisor that day and I said, I don't think this one's going to work. And she said, why not? And I said, this kid needs more than us coming into his house 2 to 3 times a week. And because sometimes, unfortunately, when whether it's autism that goes undiagnosed or whatever goes undiagnosed, then there's a mental health aspect to it.
Okay.
There was a huge mental health issue with it where he was living with grandma. He was unwanted by his birth parents. And so there was so much stuff that I remember telling my boss, I was like, I don't think this is going to work. And she was like, well, let's just try it. And within 2 months, we had to excuse ourselves from the case because of the safety for myself. And we just didn't feel safe going into the home anymore. I became that violent and that scary. And I mean, I'm a big dude. And so it wasn't so much that I was scared for my life, but at the same extent, I was scared for my career, scared for, okay, so what happens when this kid swings on me because I told him he needed to take a bath? So why? So it became a very interesting situation.
I bet. So you're a therapist by day and a comedian by night. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I do stand up at night.
So do you find a way of using your comedy to help alleviate some of the situations you might run in on a day-to-day basis?
Yes, yes. So all of my clients know that I'm a stand-up comedian. And when there was one of my clients that I would go into her school with her, and she would very, very quickly, if jokes ever came up, she would be like, you know, my therapist, he's a comedian. He'll tell you a joke. And she would. And honestly, like, that's one of my biggest pet peeves as a comedian, is when someone like, tell me a joke. I'm like, okay, fine. But so with her, it always warmed my heart that we were like, it was the first person who was truly proud of me.
That's awesome.
And so I was like, yeah, that's my girl. But I find myself using comedy, and I can, whether it's a tantrum and it's de-escalating the situation, going, hey, let's calm down, or I crack a joke, or I do this or that. I find myself using humor and comedy in therapy because I think it's it's very needed. And it's very, it cracked that engine. And then also on the flip side, I use real life situations that are funny that are in my comic. You know, I talk to the parents, I'll be like, hey, can I, I'll even run bits by them and go, this is what I want to say. They'll be like, man, that's great. So, it definitely works hand in hand. And it's really cool how two things that I never thought could work together work so beautifully together.
That's awesome to hear. So have you gone into a house, looked at it, looked around, and then said to yourself, I don't know, I don't think this is going to work. But then after whatever period of time, it does.
Yeah. So my client that I go to now, who has, that I see the most, she was, two different therapists had already been in that house and gotten, had left and removed themselves. It was just not a good fit. And I heard about how just vicious this girl was and how she was very, actually, she was apparently abusive towards animals and all this stuff. And so I was like, okay. So I remember walking in going, oh my goodness, this is going to be the worst thing in the world. And that was the day that I sat down and talked to her about tarantulas and realized that she wasn't what she was on paper. Everybody had said she this and this. And I realized that they just didn't get to know her. And so all of a sudden, she and I started to bond and we started to really communicate. And don't get me wrong, there are days where she'll tell me that she hates me. Wow. And I mean, she's brutally honest. Like one day she looked at me and she said, Patrick, you're getting fat.
Wow.
And I looked at her and I was like, girl, I've been fat. There's no getting fat. I am fat. And she goes, yeah, that's true. And so she's so funny. She's brutally honest, but I was nervous that that wouldn't work. But now I've been there for over a year and a half, and it's one of my favorite houses to be in.
So when she gets brutally honest with you or gets upset, how do you handle it? I mean, so that you can take and bring her back.
So with, you know, one thing you have to understand is every client is different.
Yes.
Every client is different. And unfortunately, ABA therapy has gotten a bad rap. Because in the past, this is how you do it. A, B, and C. And unfortunately, that's not how life works.
Right.
And not with kids with autism, not with life in general. That's not how, it's not a black and white world. There's some gray in it.
Sure.
So with her, you kind of just have to let her vent for a little bit. You have to let her get it out of her system. Or you have to sit there. She loves McDonald's. And so I'll sit there and, you know, I'll just politely remind her. I'll be like, well, that's no way to talk to someone you call your friend that you want to bring a McDonald's. Or just remind her, you know, hey, remember who we're talking to. You know, let's choose our words carefully. And it's really cool because you can tell sometimes when she's really upset, and then she starts to come back down and she's like, hey, Patrick, I'm sorry.
Nice.
And like, she'll apologize and she'll you can see it where her remorse is. And
yeah.
Instead of just, she's not sitting there at you at this.
Right.
And she doesn't care. She genuinely does start to come back down when she's angry and go, okay, yeah, I see where I messed up.
And how old is she?
She is 8 feet. She just turned 18.
So you tell me that she doesn't like people. What's her world look like within her house, in her home? And what's the world like outside of the home when you're not there to help her and teach her?
So she is in a single parent home.
Okay.
It's just her mom and then her two brothers.
Okay.
And all three are adopted.
Oh, wow.
Well, all three are black and the mom is white. So it is an interesting family dynamic, to say the least. The oldest brother and her are biologically siblings. And then third brother is just another child that was adopted and brought into the situation. She interacts okay with them. You know, she treats them with love and kindness in some days. But like anybody else who has brothers, Sometimes she hates her gut.
Sure, sure.
You know, if brother A steals something from her, then, you know, he's the worst brother in the world and I hate his guts. Okay, well, I get it. I understand why you would be upset. And we work through that. Again, it's totally understandable. My six-year-old, if my son stole her candy, she would be like, he's the worst brother ever.
Sure. Absolutely.
So working through that with her, just interacting with her brothers has been a challenge at times, especially because her oldest brother is also on the spectrum.
Oh, okay.
Her oldest brother had fetal alcohol syndrome, is on the spectrum, have a lot of issues. And an adult ABA is something totally different even than ABA, normal ABA for kids. And so it's a challenge to sometimes work through that because she does this and she can do everything right. And then brother does something from left field and it's like, great. Now we've got to figure out how to calm both of them to help.
Okay. So they're both autistic. What level on the spectrum of autism are they? And how does that work with them as far as their ability to interact with each other and get along at least most of the time? Does that happen?
Both of them are high functioning. I believe they would be categorized maybe a level two. My client will not be able to live on her own.
Oh, that's too bad.
And to be fair, her brother wouldn't either. Her youngest brother, he's not on the spectrum, but I would doubt that they would ever be able to live on their own.
Okay, so you're in Florida, and I've heard in other states that there's like 21 is the age out situation. Is that true for where you're at as well?
So at 21, I believe it is Medicaid no longer lets them do ABA, or at least in the sense that I'm doing it currently. Once you get it to older, I believe you have to be, you get ABA just from a BCBA. There's no RBT involved. And it's a little bit different. And it's actually harder to come by, even though there are plenty of adults out there that have autism and need services. Well, sometimes the system seems to just kind of go, forget about them. And which is a very scary thing.
Especially for parents that want to see their kids do well, or at least have the opportunity to do well. It seems like autism, for some reason, is on the lower end of the funding for some of these programs. So hopefully that will get better.
Yeah, it's a very real thing. And I think the mom of my client is a little nervous for her daughter, but at the same extent, the progress that we've made is tremendous. In the year and a half that I've worked with her, we've gone from a girl who wouldn't step outside, where she was so scared. The moment she stepped outside, she would start to throw up, where she was had anxiety attack, to this girl who October, I think it was, or November, we went to SeaWorld.
Oh, that's great.
And we spent the day at SeaWorld, and she was around people, and we rode rides, and then nothing more exciting than a roller coaster, in my opinion, but to ride it with someone who was so scared of people, and now she's overcoming her fears, and she's having the time of her life. It's like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Absolutely. So that's a great success story. So have you had some that you thought was going to be a success, but then after you got into it, you realized that it probably wasn't going to work out the way that you had hoped it would?
I would say that, you know, that for me personally, I've never really dealt with that because I am one of those people who I won't give up unless I'm told, look, give up. Like, I wasn't going to give up on the one kid that we got pulled from their house until my administration said, look, you're not allowed to go back in. For safety concerns, you're not allowed to go in there. My dad was an old country boy from Tennessee, And so he taught me that, you know, not give up until the job's done. So for me personally, I've never dealt with that. And with ABA, it's interesting because it's not so much, I don't go in thinking that I need to fix anyone. I go in thinking, all right, let's put some pieces together that maybe you haven't put together. And you know, it's, I know there's the puzzle that represents autism on the puzzle pieces. And so to me, it's just me bringing along a couple of puzzle pieces going, hey, let's try this. And all of a sudden it works. And so are there things that haven't gone exactly well? Yeah. I've got a client who, to this day, I've been with her for almost 2 years now. And, she still sucks her thumb as a means to calm herself, as a means to just when she's in a stressful situation, that's her guilty. And so we've got to figure out, okay, how do we substitute that behavior? That behavior is not a behavior that you would like to see. You know, you don't see a lot of adults walking down down the street sucking their thumb. So how do we get from A to B? Well, and it's been a challenge. So that's her go-to. So now we've gotten to the point where she doesn't do it in school, but she does it when she's at home. Okay, so now we started to eliminate the behavior. How do we fix it at home? Well, she normally does it when she's stressed. Okay, so what can we give her to do something else other than put her finger in her mouth? So let's get her a fidget spinner. Now, anytime you're bored, let's just fidget with this. And so now she'd do it back. Or, okay, now maybe that doesn't work. So now we switch to this. So let's go to drawing. Every time you're nervous, let's just draw a picture. So, and so it's doing something that now her hand literally can't be in her mouth.
So you just brought up the school system. Have you had situations where you've had to go into the school system and guide them and help them? And how has that worked out overall for you?
So it depends on the client. I have been in several different school systems. Some school systems are very easy to get into, and they want to help and they want to work with you and say, anything we can do to help, or, you know, you let us know, and they're great. There are other school systems that want to think that they know everything and have that big energy, and they go, well, no, you can't come in here. We've got our own people, but yet their own people aren't doing anything. So I'm sure that's how it is across the country, but I can speak only for Florida when it comes to school system, is that there are some school systems and private schools that work with us hand in hand and want us to be there. But then there are some school systems and private schools that are like, nope, we got it covered. And it's like, nope, no, you don't. No, stop. Let us help you. That's what we're here for, is to help.
Sure. Now, let's switch gears just for a second. And I'm sure you must have a website for your comedy act, so you could tell us that too, if you would.
Yes. So it's actually just opening up. We're finishing the final touches. It's just www.pabaxis.com. And so it's a new, we're totally getting it started. And, this has been a crazy journey. And my job, my company that I work for, is so supportive. And they know that I do comedy, and they love it. And they told me, you know, they're like, look, whenever you need to step away from ABA, let us know. But we expect, you know, take it to your Netflix special. So I told them, I was like, yeah, when that happens, I'll let you know.
Do you find yourself traveling quite a lot now? And then, of course, going back to your ABA after it's done?
Yeah. So right now, I try to stay around the Florida area. So I will do shows. I'm in Orlando, so I'll do shows all over Florida. Last week, I had a show at West Palm Beach, which is about 2 hours away. And so Sunday night, drove there, drove back, got an ed around 2:30 or so in the morning, and then got up and was at my client's house by 9 o'clock. So, yeah, so it's I definitely burn the candles on both ends at times. And then I also have, you know, a family of my own with my wife and my two kids. And so, it's definitely a challenge but I find it funny because one of my kids that I work with, we work on schedule and okay, so you've got to do this. And we've got to fit it all in the day. And so I find myself learning from things that I'm teaching them or, you know, picking up those life lessons where I go, oh, yeah, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people that I've talked with that will tell me that all of a sudden they've found themselves learning from the ones that they're supposed to be teaching. So it works quite well lots of times.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, they will teach you so much. And then they're also brutally honest. One of my girls looked at me one day and I did something really dumb. And she was like, are you sure you're not the one who needs therapy? And I just stare at her and excuse me. She goes, I'm sorry. I said, no. I said, that was the funniest thing. I heard it all day. Thank you. And trust me, I probably need therapy too. But they're so just with it sometimes that you're like, wow, you would. So comedy has definitely helped. I'm on Instagram at Patrick Sis Comedy. So it's really weird when a kid, because we have to keep our lives separate to an extent. And so some kids are like, well, can I come watch you do comedy? I'm like, no. And they're like, well, do you have social media? I'm like, no. And so you have to play that role of, you want to be involved in their life.
Absolutely. But you have to keep that distance for yourself too.
Exactly. Yeah. So ethically, we have a board of ethics code of ethics that we go by. It's one of those things where they're very, you know, we try not to toe that line, or we try to not go over the line by any means anywhere, but it's okay. So, you know, it gets to the point where they say, well, can you come to my birthday? And, you know, ethically, no, that's not part of it. We can't come to your birthday. But I tell you what, when I come on Monday, we'll have a big, I'll bring ice cream and we'll have a big party, just me and you. So then you turn it into a way where, oh, okay. So it becomes not so disappointing. The kid doesn't understand. The kid just wants one of their friends at their party.
Exactly. Once you make it past that initial part of your journey with them, they want and look at you as they would any friend or family.
Right.
So of course they're going to want to have you around because it's an important time in their life. So they want their friends and family around for that.
Exactly. So it's a challenge to toe that line, to make sure, okay, where don't cross the line ethically, but at the same extent, you don't want to be cold when you walk in or they're like, hey, how are you? And you're just like, good, how are you? Let's get to work. So you've got to, it's a balancing act. It really is.
Yeah, it sure is. This has been a great conversation. You've given so much great information. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much. And anytime I can sit back down and talk with you again, man, please let me know.
Oh, I certainly will. It's been a pleasure. So we'll be talking soon. Thanks again. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to our show today. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. If you know anyone that would like to tell us their story, send them to tonymantor.com, contact, then they can give us their information so one day they may be a guest on our show. One more thing we ask, tell everyone, everywhere, about Why Not Me, the World, the conversations we're having, and the inspiration our guests give to everyone, everywhere, that you are not alone in this world.